is my pleasure to present...
Good morning and welcome to the Carmichael Dave Show, starring Carmichael Dave, Jay Mars, and your phone calls on the Fire Wings hotline at 1-800-920-1140. Text in on the Jiffy Loop text line at 44-1140. Now, strap in and sit down.
Shoot up, man.
Here's Carmichael Dave.
All right, welcome back in. We appreciate you, as always. 1-800-920-1140. Here's a home run from a game yesterday.
The 1-0 swung on, hit high in the air to left. Back goes Gurriel. He's on the track. He's at the wall, and she is gone. Another Yankee home run. Oh, that Gary is scary.
What?
Great call. I'm guessing he's referring to Gary Sanchez?
Yes.
Not Gary Sheffield?
We don't have all of the sound.
Oh.
But the New York Yankees tied a major league record by hitting 5 home runs in an inning yesterday.
It's not that much.
It's not?
Nope.
Nah, it's okay. That's fine. It happened in the 4th inning. 5 home runs.
It would have been cooler if it happened in the 5th inning.
Just because of the 5-5 thing? Mm-hmm. A's did not play yesterday. The Astros did end up beating the Rangers 2-1 in what I'm sure was just a thrilling game. 6-game lead for the A's.
You know, if the playoffs were to start today in the American League, who would be the A's first-round matchup? Carmichael Dave for $1,000.
That would be the Houstonian.
Winner!
Yeah, I asked Matt George yesterday about that. I said, hey, as an A's fan, is that your ideal matchup? Don't you really want that? He was like, yeah, kind of, but, you know, Houston's really experienced. I was like, just do it. White Sox currently, again, the 1 seed. No one's really talked about this a little bit yesterday. Nobody's really talking about the White Sox. White Sox are, you know, by the numbers, the best team in the AL. Best run differential, 33-17. Half game ahead of the Tampa Bay Rays. I mean, seriously, you could have switched these standings upside down a few years back. You've got the White Sox followed by the Tampa Bay Rays, the A's, and the Twins. There have been years where those are like your bottom 4 teams, or right there. The Red Sox are the 2nd worst team. And the Yankees are just kind of sitting there in the 5 spot, sort of, underachieving. It's a weird... Hey, understatement here. Weird year in baseball. It is a weird year in baseball. And I certainly did not have the White Sox as the 1 seed. I mean, the Rays have a good ball club.
I had the White Sox as the 1 seed. I want to point that out.
Did you?
Yes.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. Don't you remember we did our big baseball preview for 3 hours? I was like, bro, look out for the south side of Chicago this year.
Oh, that baseball preview.
Yes. Hey, dude, get your head in the game.
I still don't understand my Giants. I have no explanation for this.
They've won more games than they've lost.
I have no explanation for that.
You should be praying that Yastrzemski's okay, though.
I'll say it again. Of course I am. I'll say it again. If the Giants make the playoffs, everyone was ripping on Gabe Kapler earlier this year. I still don't know if he's a good manager, but he's got to be in the manager of the year.
Conversation. Top 5.
I don't know. This guy's watched a Bay Area game or two in his life. Voice of the San Francisco 49ers, the one, the only, our dear friend, Mr. Greg Papa. Good morning, Greg.
Well, top 5. How about who would you put over him? Don Mattingly, maybe Jay Tingler in San Diego. But San Diego's got a loaded roster.
Yeah.
I think it's Kapler. I have appreciated his intellect from the moment he arrived, and that introductory press conference back in November was uneasy based on the events of what happened in the Dodger farm system when he was their farm director. And he was following Boach. It's a no-win proposition. And then the pandemic hits, and he's doing Zoom calls, and he's wearing a mask, and he can't give you the legs crossed Boach, you know, like, what do you think about this team? And just talk baseball to the writers and the reporters. So, and he's just different. But he is highly, highly intelligent. He reminds me a lot of Tony La Russa You know, Tony came into baseball in the early 80s with your Chicago White Sox and winning ugly. And back in 83, and Tony was an attorney. And, you know, who is this guy? And Tony changed baseball a little bit, the way he used the bullpen and having a power hitter, hit number two. Just saw the game very intellectually, very much like an offensive genius football coach, like a John Gruden or a Kyle Shanahan or a Bill Walsh. So I admired Gabe Kapler. I was praising him even when they were 8-16. I thought now he's just, you know, it's hard to manage this team with the bullpen and who do you trust? And your starter gets kicked out early yesterday and you got to get seven shutouts in the bullpen. So I think he is the manager of the year. Did you ever think the Giants would be a game over 500 entering the next to last weekend? I know it's a short year, but still. And they were 8-16.
I still don't buy it.
He's got to be the National League Manager of the Year.
I still have trouble buying it, and I'm a diehard, lifelong Giants fan.
Greg, I'm a diehard Dodgers fan, and I've been the only one on this show all year saying, hey, look out for the Giants. Hey, the Giants are hanging around. Hey, the Giants have some guys doing some really good things.
I don't get it.
What do you mean you don't buy it? What is there to buy? Is your one-loss record not accurate? Have you been having a counting problem? You know, data and science is not respected in the world anymore. What are you not buying? Are the numbers, did they actually lose those games they won? Did we not add correctly? What are you talking about?
It's just so, I had no expectations for this team. I know baseball is weird, but I look at it and it's like, oh, here's this kid, Yastrzemski, who's like 30, who came out of nowhere. Now he's like an MVP candidate. And they're pitching, I guess. I mean, this is like a rebuilding year. This is the year we were supposed to like just work out Joey Bart and don't get him injured and move Buster to first base next year and let's go. And here we are. It's just so weird. I have no logic, Greg. I'm fumbling because I have no logical response.
Enjoy it. If you're a Giant fan, enjoy it.
Yeah.
And Joey Bart's got some holes in his swing.
Yes.
He's got a little work to do.
Yes.
But what I would say, now they're winning too much.
Yep.
I don't want them to be the 7th seed. I want them to be the 8th seed so they can play the Dodgers in an 8-1. And then you roll out. I would go Johnny Cueto.
Yeah.
Drew Smiley, Kevin Gausman. You could go Gausman in game one. You want to go right, left, right. You may even want to, you know, have Smiley and start the opener, but, you know, the Dodgers have all that left-handed power.
Yeah.
They got some good right-handed hitters after they added Mookie, but wouldn't that be fun?
Yes.
No.
To have the Giants and Dodgers play a best of three? Come on.
Yes.
What, are you afraid of it?
He's very afraid of it.
I'm extremely afraid of it. You've seen how fluky this team is over the last 10 years. The Giants would come in and roll the Dodgers in a three-game series because that's just my luck as a Dodgers fan, and that's just what I've watched the Giants do.
It's an even
They
year.
Do fluky things.
It would be fun. Come on.
Yeah, for you.
The Giants win the wild card.
That is our very own Greg Papa, the voice of the Niners, but, you know, very, very much a Swiss Army knife of any subject we want to talk about, including the Giants. But we'll get yelled at if we don't say, you know, this is something you haven't experienced much, but here we go, at least as a member of the Niners franchise. They got beat by Arizona. This was not expected odds wise, but didn't seem like a crazy up. What did you see from the analyst part of your brain? What happened? Is this a worry for the team, or they just shake it off and kick the hell out of the Jets?
Well, the better team won the game. Yeah. There's no doubt. Arizona was better. 49ers jumped him early, but that block punt got him back into the game. And then Kyler Murray's special ability, elusiveness. And I think we're talking about baseball earlier. His baseball skills came into play where I thought he intentionally slid into a couple of guys to get a call and give himself up very late. And he got two critical personal fouls. And DeAndre Hopkins, Arizona's good. I said it all offseason. I don't know if they're going to go from 5-10-1 last year to 10-5-1 this year, but they could. Their defense has dramatically improved, and they're good. But now to the 49ers side of it, the whole experience today was weird, just weird. And I've been watching. I love the NBA, obviously, so I've watched every playoff game in the bubble because they don't overlap much. And the bubble looks like a very conducive environment to high-level offensive basketball. No sounds and great sight lines to shoot, and you're just seeing great offense. You got to really get into guys to get stops. So that's an interesting watch. And then what's going on in hockey and baseball, it's weird to see Dodger Stadium so empty and Wrigley Field empty and Yankee Stadium empty. It's like, wow, this is weird. But I wasn't there. I'm watching on TV.
Yep.
To go to Levi's on Sunday was just it's almost what Buster Posey was saying when he first was with the Giants when they had the camp at Oracle. And he's looking around. He's on a Zoom call, and everybody's got masks on. And he said, what are we doing?
Yeah.
And I kind of had that feeling of, what are we doing? Why? I mean, I would have – the league was torn. A lot of teams wanted to not start on September 10th and 13th and move it back to October, November, if you have to, just to allow the fans in. And Tim Ryan had the great line, football is not a studio sport. It is a wildly passionate spectator sport. And the whole thing, walking into the stadium, nobody there. I wasn't allowed to go on the field pregame, even though I was on the field yesterday all of practice, and I'm around the team constantly, but I can't be around the Arizona Cardinals. So I had to go down to the very first row to kind of watch pregame from there. But then going up to the booth and getting ready to do the game, and we're on the eighth floor at Levi's, and just looking down, all I see is empty red seats. And it's just, wow, this is weird. And it was weird. And the 70-decibel ambient sound they had in there, I couldn't even hear it. I don't think it was all that impactful. And the players could hear everything. You can hear F-bombs and other bombs, and you can hear all the quarterbacks' audibles, the offensive lines checks, the defensive checks. You can hear it all. So they're going to have to change their terminology from week to week or even in the game. And then I think it impacted the 49ers pass rush. Arizona was the better team on Sunday, without question. First time I've left the stadium doing the 49er games where I said they weren't as good today. When they lost the three last year in the regular season to Baltimore, Seattle, Atlanta, I thought, well, it just ran out of time or it was a play at the end. But that was they easily could have won that game. And the 49ers could have won the game had they made a couple of plays at the end, but they would have stolen it. They just were not sharp. And they'll get better, but there is going to have to be an adjustment to some degree to how you play in that stadium again without the benefit of the roaring crowd. And Levi's didn't start that way, but it got lit, you know, middle of the year on that Seattle Monday night game from that point forward and then both playoff games. Gives the defensive line a huge advantage. Offensive tackles can hear. They don't have to go silent count. It's a big difference. So you got to adjust to that. And I also think just that not being on the field much in the off season, very little. Jimmy had a camp in San Jose State and one in Nashville, but the passing game was just off. So they deserved to lose. They definitely did, and it was a really weird experience.
Greg Papa, play-by-play man for your San Francisco 49ers, joining us this morning. Greg, not a whole lot of good came out of that game. One bright spot, though, that I thought was the return of Jerick McKinnon after a two-year absence. And you started to see last game why the 49ers sought after him so much in free agency a couple years ago. He can do a lot of things in Kyle Shanahan's offense. Do you see him carving out more of a role for himself going forward?
Yeah, I think without question he's the 49ers' best route-running running back. He actually runs running backs, Jerick McKinnon, like a wide receiver. I remember Minnesota would often put him not just on the line of scrimmage in the slot, but they would put him as the outside receiver. And when you see a back, the 49ers do this a lot. The Chargers with Phillip Rivers would always do this with Eckler and other backs where they would motion the back to the side of Phillip Rivers in the gun and then have him go way out of the formation or conversely come back in tighter. And if you see a linebacker follow him in man coverage, there are very few linebackers in the league. In fact, I don't think any of them can cover Jerick McKinnon one-on-one. He's just special that way. And he's a tough runner. He's a really good blitz pickup guy. They didn't use him this way on Sunday, and it resulted in a punt being blocked. Dante Johnson was the personal protector. But he has been repping as a personal protector in training camp. Personal protector is the one that blocks closest to the punter. So that's like one of your best blockers on the team. So he's obviously very good there. He's a tough runner. The touchdown that he scored on the little five-yarder when they dropped him in coverage and Isaiah Simmons busted, that was all jet. There was a pass down the sideline for a big pass interference call. They got on Jordan Hicks. He ran a toss sweep to his left, cut back and showed a lot of toughness and then wound up scoring, you know, from the 5-yard line. So, yeah, he's the best route running back the 49ers have. Jeff Wilson Jr. can do it. Mostert, though, Raheem has gotten so much better at that. I don't know if it's being around McKinnon or they're working with him. Like the touchdown he scored, the 76-yarder on Sunday on that angle route, just the subtleties of setting it up. Yesterday in practice, he caught a 9 route as the outside receiver. So McKinnon's presence is kind of filtered down, and that's what Kyle wants. If you come into the game, you don't want to tip what the 49ers are going to do. So when McKinnon comes to the game, it can't be, oh, they're going to throw it to him. And they got to run it to him as well. And when Mostert comes in the game, it can't be, well, 31's not as good running routes as 28, so, you know, we'll probably give it to him. Well, maybe, but then, you know, you're running up and out a wheel route or something, an angle route, and boom. And then he's got the ball in space, and that's what he's great at. So, yeah, Jerick McKinnon had a really solid first game as a Niner.
A lot of 49er fans, it's not just the loss. They're wringing their hands at Richard Sherman. Goes on the IR, and tough replacing Richard Sherman at the same time. How do you think that Niner defense adjusts, or can they really when you lose somebody like that?
Well, they got other injuries there. They got Akella Witherspoon was back at practice yesterday, but he's still wearing the blue jersey, which means he's cleared to some degree to practice, but not fully out of the concussion protocol. I didn't see Jason Verrett at all, so I don't think he'll be able to get over the hamstring. So it would be Akella Witherspoon, I think, on one side, Emmanuel Mosley on the other, and Kaywan Williams in the slot. But if Akello can't go, then it'd probably be Dante Johnson who would start. So the Jets are not as offensively potent, obviously, as the Arizona Cardinals. They have Jamison Crowder. Their young receiver, Denzel Mims, was placed on IR this week, so he won't play, and Le'Veon Bell won't play. So Frank Gore is going to be the big guy, and they have a couple of tight ends, Chris Herndon and Ryan Griffin, you have to worry about a little bit. But I think the 49ers will drop back into their zones and tackle on top. And I do like Sam Darnold. He's very inconsistent. At some point, I would think he would lock in and be solid week to week, but a lot of it is the pieces around him. But not just this game, though, the Giant game, and then the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday Night Football when the 49ers come home in October. He's going to have to miss that game. And then you just hope that it's not going to get into the Achilles because it is a calf injury. Is it a lower calf injury? You know, from Kevin Durant's situation here in the Bay Area, we get a little squeamish knowing how calves can end up. And Richard does have the history of the Achilles, a surgery on the right and bone spurs on the left. So if it's 3 games, they can get by without him, but you don't want it to turn into much more than that.
Well, and speaking of injuries, George Kittle banged up. And, you know, speculate all you want. I wonder if you're Kyle Shanahan, if you've got a percentage for George Kittle that he needs to be at. And if he's not there, you take advantage of the Jets and Giants back-to-back, two not very good teams, and just go with Jordan Reed. Or do you think if Kittle's ready to go, they go and Shanahan's not thinking about that?
No, I think that's a doctor call. I think if the doctor says playable, but I don't. I mean, that was a hyperextended knee, and it's just not supposed to go that direction. So I would think he stretched something. He was able to play all but one snap. He went back in the locker room with about 30 seconds to go in the half. I don't know if they gave him a painkiller to come back and play the second half, possibly. But he's a tough guy. But no, you can't overlook teams and say, "Oh, the Jets and Giants suck," and we'll be able to beat them without them because these are games you got to win. It's only a 16-game season. So I don't think that's a medical call, but honestly, I didn't see him at all yesterday. He was nowhere near. He's back getting rehab. So I think that'll go right down to the wire. And it may be the kind of thing that lingers for a couple of weeks. I mean, when he did it against Arizona, the one last year on Halloween Day, I think was way worse.
Yeah.
He wound up popping a capsule. He also chipped a bone in his ankle, and he missed. He wound up missing 10 quarters. So we'll see. He's a tough guy, but you just have to be smart. Plus, the game is going to be played on turf the next 2 weeks. The Meadowlands has that. It's not like the old school, you know, vet, you know, cement turf, but it's still that field turf. So it's not like real grass. So they'll make the right call. And if they have to just say no, you're not going to play, they'll say you're not playing.
All right, we're out of time, but I got to ask you, who you got in the NBA Finals?
Well, I'll tell you who I don't want is the purple and gold.
Yes, agreed.
And I, you know, when I grew up, I was a Jerry West fan and a Wilt fan, and I admired Magic's teams. But when I got into the NBA with the Warriors in the mid-'80s, it's very easy just to start hating the haughtiness of the Los Angeles Lakers. I did admire Kobe, so it's not really a pure everything Lakers I hate, because I do admire some of the things they've done in Jerry West, but it's a LeBron thing. I mean, going back to the Cavaliers and the rivalry with the Warriors, so I was really disappointed that the Clippers lost, because I thought they were the best team, and I thought they had the best chance to beat the Lakers, but my word, how good is that Joker, Nikola Jokic? Could they? Would you be shocked, Dave, if Denver beats the Lakers? I wouldn't be.
I'd be surprised, but not shocked. And of course, we sit here. In fact, both of us really have ties. You guys, the Warriors, as an assistant, and of course, here in Sacramento, he's the one that got away. And Michael Malone.
Michael Malone.
Love him to death. Root for him. And sad that we're not with him anymore. But you know. Is what it is. It's like an ex-girlfriend with, you know, walking down the red carpet with Brad Pitt at the Oscars. You smile with a tear coming down your eye. So
yeah, but now Brad and Jennifer Aniston are doing Fast Time at Ridgemont High reading. So maybe you never know. Maybe Michael Malone will come back to SAC one day. You're going to have to pay up for that.
That is Greg Poppin, the voice of the San Francisco 49ers, joins us each and every Friday at 8:05. Have a great call this weekend, sir. Thank you for your time, as always.
Thank you, brother. Talk to you next week.
Take care. Thanks. That's Greg Papa. And we will, just always seep in what he says. We will take a break.
Yeah! That was nice.
Coming up next.
All right. Final half hour of the program. We got Once in a Blue Moon, a crossover, a What's on Tap, news with Ed Crane. But next, Dr. Richard Pan makes his weekly stop. Don't go away.
When management finally gets tired and just gives up, the Carmichael Dave Show returns now.
Dr. Richard Pan, in 5 minutes. You know, I thought I'd heard every take on LeBron James. I did.
Oh, is there a new one?
There's a new one, and, you know, it's got me thinking. Oh, wait, hold on. I did.
Oh, is there a new one?
Okay. There's a new. Hold on. Let me get rid of the YouTube here.
Thank you for giving me some more love.
Hey, that was your voice there.
That was me.
Let's see if we can get this sound right. It's been a while since I've used sound.
There's your bell. Hey.
Okay.
Well, we need a meow to make it official.
I thought I had heard every LeBron James take.
Thank you.
This one, though, it's going to make you think, Jay. Kevin Garnett, LeBron James, you remember their pregame rituals, chalk toss, all that. I don't know who this person is, and I don't care, but everyone listen in and think about this. It might have a point.
Is LeBron James just an athlete? Well, I believe this expose, we're going to take a little dive into what I believe is quite frightening. Now, here you're going to see this chalk ritual toss, what the sports world calls it a chalk toss. Mm-hmm. But it's simply a disguise for what he's really doing, a high-level conjuring, a spell, an incantation from this Illuminati wizard where he's summoning demons. I believe he's conjuring up demons before every game.
Yeah.
Plain and simple. Yeah. Really take a look at these so-called chalk tosses. It is very frightening, this ritual that he does. I mean, putting his hands up, these Baphomet-style dragon demons appear.
Is LeBron James a high-level Illuminati wizard conjuring demons with his pregame chalk toss?
I had some demonic music I was getting ready to play underneath it that I just queued up.
Oh, let's, for people that missed that, here we go. Let's just do that again.
James, just an athlete. Well, I believe this expose, we're going to take a little dive into what I believe is quite frightening. Now, here you're going to see this chalk ritual toss, what the sports world calls it a chalk toss, but it's simply a disguise for what he's really doing, a high-level conjuring, a spell, an incantation from this Illuminati wizard where he's summoning demons. Uh-huh. I believe he's conjuring up demons before every game.
I do too.
Plain and simple. really take a look at these so-called chalk tosses. It is very frightening, this ritual that he does. I mean, putting his hands up, these Baphomet-style dragon demons appear.
Keep that going, because I think that's it, man. LeBron James is a high-level Illuminati wizard.
Summoning demons.
Summoning demons in chalk before each game.
So how's that go? Like, he throws it up and then it says, like, summon me, Chaos.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know anything about conjuring
demon
demons.
Demon Lord, summon me. Rajon Rondo. Demon Lord, where is my Contavious Caldwell Pope?
Here's my question.
Okay.
If he's a high-level Illuminati wizard, why can't he summon a hairline?
That was uncalled for.
I'm just saying.
That was absolutely uncalled
if
for.
If you can summon a demon, can't you summon a hairline?
Stop it right now. The whole Tourette thing from earlier.
I'm not bald shaming.
That doesn't bother me. When you start in on the hairline, though, that's a problem.
Not bald shaming.
You're bald shaming.
Here's why it's different. You are bald and accept it, and you shave your head. And you're like, you know what? It's here. I'm here for it. I'm going to make the best of it. Bald is power. LeBron, DeMarcus Cousins wearing his headband to cover it up. Don't be fooled.
You are awful.
DeMarcus Cousins' hairline is receding faster than something that recedes fast. I don't know. It's like the wave that comes in from
the
ocean.
Dude,
pulls
you're
back.
The real demonic Illuminati wizard.
You,
Dr. Pan's calling it. I am so wizard. Angry.
I buy it. Just saying. Don't you think LeBron could have summoned a, I don't know, a couple more finals victories? Something to think about over the weekend. Joining us right now, he always gives us something to think about over the weekend. He makes laws. He serves his community. He is a doctor, and he educates us on a weekly basis. We appreciate his time, as always. Dr. Richard Pan. Good morning, Dr. Pan. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's good to have the air a bit clear. How are you?
Oh, isn't it, though? Like, for real. That sucked, and I didn't like it, and I don't think anybody did. It's a hot take. I don't think anybody liked smoky air where the air quality was in the, like, 300s. Boy, this is your wheelhouse, and we predicted it. We've been talking for months now, and we get closer and closer and closer. And what have we said this whole time, Doc? That vaccines are going to play a starring role in the final act of 2020, the movie. We're hearing November, December, January. We're starting to hear about distributions. We're starting to hear about order of distribution. Let's start there. From what we hear, it sounds like they're going to go something in the neighborhood of first responders, elderly, people of color adversely affected percentage-wise, and that kids might be like the last ones to get it. Are you okay with that distribution method, or do you have issues with how they're beginning to lay it out?
Well, it's something that needs to be discussed. First of all, we need to have a vaccine that's approved. We have to know how well it works and who it works on, right? So we still don't have that information. We need to have that information. I know they're trying to pre-manufacture these vaccines in the hopes that they'll be approved so that we'd have doses, but still, you still have to manufacture enough doses, and you have to get it out to people. I mean, so I would just argue that perhaps the dry run is how well we can get everyone their flu vaccine this fall, right? So we have vaccination, we have the vaccine, we are getting more supplies, and we have to get it to people. And then, of course, people have to be willing to get it. So that's the other part, of course, with any COVID vaccine is the level of trust people have, so you can offer it to people, but people don't want it or they decline. They're concerned it was approved too fast. The data isn't publicly available about its efficacy and safety. Then that could be a challenge.
I this is an unfair question because we're probably not there yet. And that's fine if that's your answer, that we're not there yet. But I have always wondered this. You are one of the nation's leaders in all things vaccine, education, safety, law. That to me has been your biggest contribution to our community, and it's a huge one. At the way things stand right now, from what you're hearing, what you're seeing, and where we're going, if The president is correct. If we get a vaccine sometime in November, for example, if the FDA approved it and it was being distributed, are you in a position where you would say, if it's being approved and distributed, I can stand behind it and I will encourage people to get one and that it's safe? Or do you need a lot more information before you put your stamp of approval, which carries a lot of influence with a lot of people, your stamp of approval behind it?
Well, certainly FDA approval is a good sign. However, given some concerns about political pressure on the FDA and CDC, I think they also need to back that up by being completely transparent about the data behind it. So when the CDC made its recommendation that people who were asymptomatic didn't need testing, everyone said, where's the data? Usually the CDC is very forthcoming, but it wasn't. And now it turns out there might have been political pressure. I think that many of the vaccine manufacturers recognize that this is an issue too. And that's why many of them came together and said, we're not going to release a vaccine until we've gone through the stage three trials. So the FDA is going to need to prove to everyone that not only does it approve it, but they have to provide the data behind the approval so that independent scientists can take a look at it and say, yes, that the data supports the decision. So that's going to be very important before I think physicians like myself and many others would say, okay, let's all get that vaccine.
Do we have any idea? A couple questions on my text line right now saying, hey, how effective do we think this will be compared to the flu vaccine? Are we anywhere near being able to answer that question?
No, that's why we have to do the stage three trials, right? That's why we do the trials in the first place, so we can have that data. So until the trials are completed and we have that information, we don't know.
Is there
that's why we do trials.
Is there a road, as Dr. Richard Pan joins us, is there a road you can describe for us? And certainly there will be turns and speed bumps along the way, but I can question a lot of people's mind as it does seem that we're barreling towards vaccinations and that will show up at some point in the next months. Is there a road you look at where we're back at concerts, we're back at sporting events, COVID is like H1N1 is right now, just kind of a thing of the past and no longer affecting our day-to-day life? Is that vaccines and then herd immunity? Is it still masks and social distancing? What is the, and I know we don't have 2 hours, but what is your road from where we are right now to returning to a quote-unquote normal way of life?
Well, what I would say is, first of all, is that there's going to be no silver bullet that's going to take care of everything with one blow. So the first vaccines that come out, we don't know how effective they'll be, but they may not be that effective. That's actually true of most vaccines. So oftentimes it's several generations later where we get a stronger vaccine. We want to talk about measles vaccines, polio, et cetera, right? We've seen the first ones that come out sometimes are not necessarily the most effective, but they're effective enough to try to limit transmission. What we do know, while we're waiting for a vaccine, by the way, is that wearing masks and physical distancing does work. It's worked in many other countries. When we look at what's happening in the United States compared to other countries, we can do much better without the vaccine. None of the countries have a real vaccine, right? So we can do better. We don't need to have people gathering with other households in parties or in celebrations and things like that, right? I think it's going to be very challenging to have like large-scale events like sporting events or conventions or so forth because the risk of a spreading event. A vaccine may help with that, but depends on how effective it is and how many people get it. Vaccines aren't terribly effective if you still have a sizable portion of the population that doesn't get it. And I would just keep in mind, the real challenge with a contagious disease and a pandemic like this is that a large majority of people can be doing the right thing.
Right.
So, over 60%, even 70% of people do the right thing. But it's the 5 or 10% of people who don't, who screw it up for the rest of us. And I think that's something we have to keep in mind. So every time someone does something out there and they don't care about what happens to other people, like there was that parent in Massachusetts sent their kid to school when they knew they were COVID positive, yes. Right? When someone holds a rally in front of the Capitol and they're unmasked, yeah. and they're all close together.
Yep.
That is why we can't go back to school and reopen our businesses. All right, it's the selfish 5 to 10% that are screwing it up for the rest of us, and so we've just got to tell people, look, we are all in this together. We all have to pull together, and we're doing it not because someone told us we have to do it. We're doing it because we care about each other, right? We care about each other's health. We care about each other's education. We care about each other's economy and their jobs. That's what it's really about. So we can do it even without a vaccine. Other countries are doing it. We can do it too. And that's, I guess, what I really want to tell people. There are things we can do now. You know, get your flu shot, wear your mask, keep your physical distance. And if everyone does that, we can get the number of cases down. We are actually heading in the right direction right now. Now, we'll have to wait maybe another week or week and a half to see what happens after Labor Day. People did Labor Day, so we'll see if we have a bump up or not. But hopefully everyone did, and we won't. But you know, we're heading the right direction. Let's just all hang in there and keep doing it and ask all our friends and neighbors and family members, hey, let's all do the right thing so that we don't screw this up.
Well said, Dr. Richard Pan. He joins us each and every Friday to give us updates, and those updates are going to be extremely important as we head into winter, as we hopefully get closer to a vaccine and hopefully open up in a safe fashion. Dr. Pan MD, Dr. Pan MD on Twitter. You can also Doc, we got you. Oh, I'll put him on hold. Please thank him for me. Dr. Richard Pan also online as well, drrichardpan.com. We'll take a break.
Yeah! That was nice!
Coming up next.
Okay, final segment of the week. What's on tap? Once in a blue moon and the crossover. We got a lot to get to. Don't go away. We will be right back.
What you need to know, what you need to watch, what you need to follow today. It's What's on Tap, brought to you by
the NBA's Illuminati Wizard. Is that correct?
Yeah, high level Illuminati Wizard. we played the lady earlier. I don't know her name, but
Jan. We're gonna call her Jan.
Yeah, she said that LeBron James throwing chalk in the air was a form of high-level Illuminati wizardry, and he was conjuring demons.
Nope, that's a real thing.
I mean,
that's you heard that correctly.
Real thing. Look for that on Four Down Territory. Or Three for Madness Monday. We'll break that down.
Okay.
What's on tap? Conjure yourself an Illuminati demon today. What's on tap in the world of golf right now? U.S. Open underway. Round two, and boy, there's some fun golf there. The top two leaders right now, Justin Thomas and Patrick Reed, have yet to tee off. Louis Oosthuizen, just by really being even today, is it now at 3 under, tied with two others for third place. In fact, looking at it right now, Xander Schauffele is 1 under, Bubba Watson 2 under, Berger 3 under. In fact, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Six, I'm doing this for a reason, bear with me. Yep, 6, 7, Keegan Bradley, minus one today. 7 players in the field thus far, under par, that's it. The course, you can see the flag waving. They said it was going to get progressively more difficult over the weekend, and that is what's happening. You got to wonder if under par is going to even, red numbers are even going to be a thing in this tournament by the time it's all over on Sunday. Well, we got a ton of football on tap. Obviously, that would take the entire segment. But in the NBA, tonight, game one.
That was a real Illuminati wizard voice there.
Tonight.
Yeah.
I'm Conjuring Demons. Nuggets, Lakers. Lakers favored by 7. Jay.
Yeah.
Do you believe the Lakers will win, but the Nuggets will cover? Lakers win and cover. Nuggets win and cover.
Nuggets win and cover.
You've got the Nuggets winning game one.
The Lakers have lost 2 straight game ones.
They're due.
They're a little rusty.
They're due.
A little rusty Griswold, mind you.
By the way, Tiger Woods, I don't believe, has teed off yet. The cut line is +3. That's where Tiger Woods is at right now. He tees off in about an hour and a half, and I know that Cam was struggling a little bit Oh, boy. I'm scrolling down, scrolling down. Oh, Cameron Champ plus 7 for the tournament, plus 4 today. He is on the 14th hole. So Cameron Champ, barring a miraculous finish over the last three or four holes, Cameron Champ will not be spending the weekend in New York playing golf, at least not in the U.S. Open. We got a once in a blue moon, do we not?
I have one.
Well, let's get to it right now, shall we?
Once in a blue moon, brought to you by Blue Moon Beer. Here's Jay Mars.
According to ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski, Giannis has won his second straight NBA MVP award.
I saw that, and I saw him break it about an hour ago because I don't think it gets announced till like 11. I'm thinking, honestly, and I'm not attacking Woj's credibility, do you think he just tweeted it out early just because everyone knows Giannis is going to win it?
Nah, he got it confirmed.
You got it confirmed?
Come on. Okay. He learned his lesson with the whole Seattle-Sacramento thing.
That's a great point right there.
He joins Hakeem Olajuwon in 1994 and Michael Jordan in 1988 as the only players to win the MVP and Defensive Player of the Year awards in the same season. Hakeem also won an NBA title that year in 1994.
I don't want to put it out there for superstition purposes, so let's not talk about an injury. Let's say that Giannis has a press conference next week, mm-hmm. and he announces that he's done with basketball. He's going to go do charity work all over the world, and he's done what he needs to do in basketball, and he's moving on. Is Giannis Antetokounmpo a Hall of Famer?
Yes.
Right now?
Right now.
No championships, no deep round playoffses. Just basically on the strength of two MVPs.
Two MVPs, multiple All-Star, All-Defensive appearances, All-League appearances, and a Defensive Player of the Year. Okay. He's played 9 seasons. Yeah.
Has he played 9 seasons?
Was he 2011 or 2012?
That does not seem right.
No, although, no, I'm wrong. He's played 7 seasons. He was 2013.
Still, though, golly, 7 seasons. It still mm-hmm. seems like he's like 21.
Yeah. I'm more of a quality over quantity when it comes to careers, and that's a quality career, man. It is a quality career if I've ever seen
Isn't
one.
Isn't Derrick Rose the only MVP that's not going to be in the Hall of Fame?
I mean, I have to go back and look at like MVPs from the 50s, 60s, and 70s, but probably. You know where that's really common for MVPs to not get in the Hall of Fame is baseball.
Yeah.
I think like Willie McGee has 2 MVPs. He's not in the Hall of Fame. It's baseball. Like the different Hall of Fame criteria per sport is just so funny to me.
Willie McGee, ex-Giants.
Giants legend and A's legend, Willie McGee.
That's right, I forgot. Meanwhile, everyone thinks of Willie McGee as a St. Louis Cardinal.
Yes.
Yeah, it was the MVP, won MVP in 1985. 4-time All-Star, won a World Series, 3 Gold Gloves, 2-time batting champion.
Played like 30 years.
Not in the Hall of Fame.
Dude, I mean, your boy Timmy Lincecum won back-to-back Cy Youngs. He's not going to be a Hall of Famer. He was the best pitcher in baseball for 2 straight years.
You know what's funny about that is that resume, basically, if you transfer that over to the NBA, he's a surefire Hall of Famer. First ballot.
Yes. I think in the American League, didn't Pat Hinken win like 2 Cy Young Awards?
Yeah.
He won't be
Toronto
in the Hall of
Blue
Fame.
Jays. Interesting. Interesting. All right.
Crossover?
Crossover time.
What's happening with Jason Ross and Doug Christie?
Hit that horn, babe. Let's dance.
Let's find out right now with the crossover. Here's today's crossover.
Normally on a Friday,
coaching,
we do a feel good, but we're going the other way. What are you saying? Coaching?
Coaching.
You talking about coaching?
Coaching.
We've asked the guys about coaching before, Doug.
Yes, we have.
About like those great jobs, optimal jobs.
Yes.
Like, you'd want this job to be this coach.
Absolutely.
We're flipping it.
Flip it. Flip you for real.
Which is the worst coaching job out there in professional sports?
That you say you would not want, hands down.
Yeah. You can't have it. And nothing local here.
Okay.
Well, damn it. Well, now how are we supposed to answer the question?
I seriously was thinking, okay, let's start with the Kings and then move from there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on it.
No, not Siri. Shut up. if we're not going local in basketball, I'd probably go the Knicks.
I was going to say the Knicks for hoops.
In baseball, golly. I would probably go the Pirates.
Really?
Just maybe the Orioles.
The Orioles are, meh.
I know.
I think the Mets are pretty undesirable.
No, you're right. And then in football.
The Browns, right?
Yeah, I think so. But again, it's like the Kings. If you go in there and the Browns make the playoffs, you're the best coach ever. And if they don't make the playoffs, well, you're like every other coach that got screwed.
But that's the thing. You go in there, you know, you basically have off season, maybe two, to get them into the playoffs. You don't have any time to develop anything. No.
Maybe the Lions.
Nah, I'd rather have the Lions' job than the Browns' job.
What about the Washington football team?
Rather have that job than the Browns' job.
Yeah. Okay.
Washington, you say that like they're not undefeated right now.
I know.
Now.
They are in first place on their own.
Yes.
All right. Doug Christie and Jason Ross, your crossover question. Jason, you know, I mean, actually participate. Jason, you've played sports and not at a professional level that we know of, but this may count if you have an experience. But, Doug, I imagine you're more likely to have seen this. We were talking about Marcus Smart's meltdown in the locker room. Doug, I'd love for you to share with the audience the biggest locker room tirade you ever saw from a player, maybe a coach. Would love it if it was if there was one that was specific to those Kings years. Like, who on those teams was more likely to lose it and throw something or yell at people? How do you take that as a player? And Doug, were you ever one of those guys?
Doug Christie?
Did Doug Christie ever lose it and scream at people in the locker room, toss a table?
We know Jason Ross did.
Jason Ross does that all the time in KHDK meetings. Did Doug Christie ever take those giant grapes of his and toss them at players' heads? For Jay Mars, I'm Dave. Jim Rome is next. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye now.